Was it something we said?
Are you talking to me?
Do you have a comment to make?
Are you talking to me?
Or a bone to pick with us? Why not send us an email to feedback@midwestpeaceprocess.com or join our forum at forum.midwestpeaceprocess.com, or you can just leave us a comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/midwestpeace, or follow us on Twitter @midwestpeace. So that's how to contact us. Now let's give you something to contact us about. This week, we all wear our birthday suits. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you now. Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you.
The Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 39, Kids Call It The Process. Today is August 16th, 2012. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And this is Rob.
And we are celebrating our birthday.
This hey!
Woo! Your anniversary of our first show. Hard to believe.
How about that?
It's been a whole year.
So many problems solved by us.
I know. There's hardly any left.
So much consensus building.
That's right. We've done pretty well, I think, over the last year. 39 episodes and got quite an audience built now. Over 100 fans on Facebook, and we're adding new Twitter followers every week. So doing pretty good, I think.
Hey.
All right. So do we get a raise?
Absolutely. I'm going to double everybody's salary.
All right. Put me in the new tax bracket.
That's right.
Oh, it's going to force you to work hard, work less hard. I mean, why work harder if you're going to be in another tax bracket and get punished?
Right. Well, I'm just going to continue paying my 13.6% taxes. Gains earning.
I don't even know how much taxes I pay because I have it in a blind trust.
Oh, wait, I don't pay taxes. I forgot.
But I didn't know that I didn't pay taxes. Oh, we all want to be like Mitt. He does have better hair than me, Mitt does.
He certainly has more hair than me.
Yeah, that's right. And I do like my president's looking a little tired, so I'm giving big credit for... Like Clinton had some classic like bags under his eyes at some points, which I appreciated. And look at Obama's hair in 4 years.
Yeah,
he's a skinny gray old man right now.
Yeah, that's a telltale sign of having been president.
Yeah. I mean, you it must be tempting if you know to just say, look, 4 years is enough. It's hard work.
Yeah, I have a hard time, you know, looking at myself in the mirror after the first 4 years and saying, why do I want to do this again?
Right. Yeah, you must be thinking of legacy or something beyond yourself or something.
Maybe.
I don't know about you guys, but he's giving me gray hair, too.
Yeah.
From wisdom? Is that what it is?
No.
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 So what do we got this week on the birthday show?
This week we're going to cover a couple of topics. Talk about Paul Ryan, of course, and I also want to hit on a couple of gun control-related topics following up from last week's episode. And then one of our listeners, our favorite listener, Eric, suggested that we spend some time talking about the things we've learned over the last year as being part of the Midwest peace process. So we'll probably finish up with that. So, yeah, do you want to talk about Paul Ryan first?
Oh, I got thoughts.
Go for it.
I mean, the thoughts that come to mind was I was pretty excited about the pick because I felt like we're going to have some meat on these Republican bones, even though he's a skinny guy. I think Romney tends to talk in vague terms on purpose because he's trying to lay out a general opposition, but he doesn't really want to talk about where it's really going to hurt when he really gets around to cutting all these things. And so he's kind of tiptoes around. Well, Paul Ryan, I respect as a decent thinker, and I think Obama has said the same thing in some quotes that I think he called the Ryan budget a serious proposal. So I think it's a real thing to consider, and it forms a real debate. And I think the quality of the debate has improved the last week because we're not talking about Bain Capital so much, and we're not talking about Obama's secret Muslim nature. You know, we're talking a little bit more about what the Ryan budget is and how it differs against what the Obama plan is, and you can really get into some details. And I've heard some shows. This one in particular is a very good show, where they talk about all this. And so I felt like the debate would be improved, and we would really have like a clash of the titans a little bit. Of course, like all things in politics, my hopes are dashed instantly. Or fairly instantly, as Romney seems to be kind of distancing himself from the Ryan budget, which just drives me absolutely crazy. You know, just own that thing. You know, that's why you picked him. You picked him to put some real fiscal responsibility details to whatever your loosey-goosey plan is. But now anytime anybody asks him about Medicare or what's in the Ryan budget, he's like, well, that's his budget. I'll have my own, and we're never going to agree. And now we're back to waffling around. He shouldn't be able to do that. Let's just get it on.
So a candidate distancing himself from something bothers you?
Well, I think he chose it's like the mixed message. I was hoping that he chose Ryan so that the Ryan budget can kind of get added to the Romney platform. That was my hope.
Right.
But now he's running away from the very thing that he brought into the campaign.
Right. Because, I mean, that's kind of what Ryan's known for, right? Is his economic acumen. And
that's right.
And, yeah, when you distance yourself from that, really, what was the point of picking him? You could have picked Tim Pawlenty and, you know, had everything that you needed.
Right. It's kind of a cynical pick too, because it's almost like if he's going to do that, he's picking him to fire up the base, but he doesn't want to do anything that the base is fired up about.
Right.
You know, it's like, look, but I picked this guy. I don't agree with anything he says, and I'm not going to tell you what I disagree with, but come on, it's your guy, right?
Yeah.
It's like everything Romney does. It's like there's no soul there. Come on, you guys got to be with me there. Well, you know, like, and I won't say, it's not because I disagree with the guy. Like, I feel the exact opposite about Paul Ryan. I think Paul Ryan has real, well thought out opinions. I don't think he thinks Obama is an evil Muslim. I think he thinks Obama is very wrong on budget issues, and he can explain why. And I think they have completely different versions of the way they are, different visions of the way they think the country should go. I completely respect that. But Romney's being the hollow man again.
Yeah, and what do you think about him kind of throwing out tradition and you know, announcing his pick before the convention?
I didn't really consider it too much. I mean, I think he probably did it. I mean, you do it, get a little bump. You know, I think he was probably floundering a little bit on the campaign trail and didn't want a couple more weeks traveling around Iowa or wherever he is on his own getting beat up about the same stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a political choice. I mean, I don't think it had anything to do with real tradition. I think he felt like it would help him out.
But, well, it almost seems like it's the only card he's got to play now, you know.
Right.
And he's
right.
Played it. So now what?
I think it's just write it out to the convention, right?
Well, yeah. But, you know.
But then what do you do from the convention to the election?
Right.
Right.
the point.
Yeah, and I wish he would just embrace it. Like all my hopes about having a real debate. Like when I heard that he picked Ryan, I was like, ooh, we're going to get it on now. You know, let's really get this debate started. It's like we're getting a C block on it.
To me, it almost feels like it's a trial balloon. You know,
of what to like, see what.
Well, like. He names Ryan, and he's just waiting to see what the reaction's going to be and whether they're going to be able to, you know, continue to spin it the right way. And if it all goes south, then, you know, they could change their mind and at the convention say, well, that may not have been the best choice. We're considering our options at this point.
You think?
Or come up with some reason like, well, he has family issues, so he's going to have to bow out.
Yeah.
And that's how they would.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it smacks of the Palin pick too, because McCain, no fan of Palin, and during the choosing phase, but I think he felt like he was behind. He needed to throw the bomb. Needed to do something to shake up the game.
Right.
And then look what we got. So this feels a little bit like that. Maybe.
I wouldn't put Paul Ryan in the same light as a Palin pick.
Certainly
maybe
not.
The timing of it or the
I just mean the
idea,
long ball.
But they're way.
Oh, yeah. Right. And well, and one thing I thought of is like poor Joe Biden, you know, like he's going to have two VP debates, and one's against Palin, and one's against Paul Ryan. He's got like the crazy ends of the spectrum there.
I don't really see it as being, you know, that far outside the box, really.
Of what?
Well, I mean, to compare it to Palin, I mean, Palin was beyond the pale as a, you know, as a VP pick, but
yes.
I mean, Paul Ryan's fairly conservative. I was intrigued by just his choice of VP candidate only because there were so many people saying, well, Condoleezza Rice is on the list, you know. And I think that would have been a much more interesting choice.
But she was pro-choice, right?
Is she? I don't know.
I believe that's the things I've heard is that that pretty much knocked her out of contention.
It could be, but you know, if Romney really wanted to make a statement and shake things up, that would have been the pick, not Paul Ryan.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think the Paul Ryan, I don't know, it certainly has changed the debate. And I don't think I was clear about my Palin versus Paul Ryan and with respect to Joe Biden. I think Joe Biden's approach during that debate, like his main goal was to not come off like a pompous ass. Pretty hard for Joe Biden. You know, I think everyone knew she was new on the scene and everyone was giving her a lot of guff about not knowing what she was doing. And so I think if he was mean, it would have just been piling on. So he was like the kind old grandfather, and he kind of let her stumble over herself a little bit. I think that was the approach. I think it worked. Well, now you got Paul Ryan on the other side, who's no intellectual slouch of any kind. He's going to start bringing it. So come on, Joe, you better start studying, buddy.
Yeah, right.
You know, I think Joe's going to have some problems.
Right. And wouldn't you rather just see the Paul Ryan Obama debate? Man, I'd tune in for that. I'd pay for pay-per-view for that.
Okay, well, here's my prediction. You heard it here first. At the convention, Romney and Ryan are going to switch places. And Ryan's going to become the candidate. Romney's going to be his running mate.
People would love that. I would love that.
If only.
But then wouldn't you think, like, well, why even bother with Romney at all, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what does he really bring to the ticket as a VP?
Right.
You got, like, some rich guy with you. Hey, what's up, Mitt? Nothing, just hanging out over here.
Yeah, just hanging up over here, watching dressage on the Olympics.
Right. Oh, yeah. What's with you Republicans? You guys are so close. So close. Yet so far. Yeah, it's like you can't get out of your own way, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah. So, yeah, Ryan's got some baggage, too, that they're having to deal with now. And I hadn't really paid attention to that prior to this, but there's been a couple of stories this past week where they've been drawing attention to, well, first of all, seniors don't like him because he wants to get rid of Medicare.
Right.
That is
the one big
that is being misclassified.
But the other thing that I found interesting, my ears perked up when I heard this, is that he's supposedly a follower of Ayn Rand.
Oh, sure.
That he's, big follower of hers. And, he's now, I guess, gone on the record a couple of times saying that, she has not been as strong an influence on him as some people say. But, there's a couple of quotes of his from a speech he gave back in 2006 that don't leave much to the imagination as far as what he thinks of Ayn Rand. And I don't know. I think that's interesting because, the one thing, I don't know if I put a link in the show notes to this or not, but the one thing I was reading about it was they were just saying that it might create a problem with, the religious right, because Rand was an atheist. I mean, like a militant atheist. And, saying that you're one of her devotees is going to draw unwanted attention from the religious right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Well, and I think that's just a fascinating topic in general. We just put a whole show on that one. The way people pound their chest and throw their Atlas Shrugged out there, and still adhere to all of the right wing conservative Christian social issues. Like those two things cannot work together. They're diametrically opposed to each other.
Right.
But people, I know a lot of Republicans that continually say, oh, you got to read this, it's the best book ever. They're also hitting all the evangelical high notes too. Yep. And it's like, well, I believe in Ayn Rand more on the economic part, not the social part. Like, well, I don't know how much you could slice and dice those things, or at least you got to think about it a little bit.
Yeah, you certainly can't claim to be an objectivist, and still be religious,
Right.
Those two are incompatible, as far as I'm concerned, but. I'm a Christian, but reading Ayn Rand doesn't offend me like it does some people.
Oh, okay.
I recognize that she's writing from that place, being an atheist. It comes through in the writing, but it doesn't offend me.
And yeah.
That some people just can't tolerate that.
But do you work to marry up the godlessness with the economic policies? Like, are those completely separate and parallel threads, or
well,
you don't see how they're playing into each other?
I mean,
meaning that your financial philosophy is godless. There, take that.
No, because. To me, the fundamental fight there is between individualism and collectivism. And, though that fight, to me, is completely independent of any sort of religious component.
Hmm. Yeah, and I guess it's not for me. I guess there, people on the right tend to easily claim that they want to use politics and the government to achieve their Christian agenda.
Yeah.
But I think that's also true from a social justice lefty point of view.
Yes.
So those things do play together somewhat.
Yeah, and I think Rand would have been opposed to both of those positions. Using the levers of power to achieve those ends, she would have been opposed to that.
Right. She crazy.
I don't want to get into a big discussion about Rand and her philosophies, but there are definitely some logical inconsistencies in her thought.
I haven't read Atlas Shrugged. I guess I haven't read any of her writing.
Yeah.
I started to read Atlas Shrugged when I was in college because this chick I liked was reading it, but...
nice.
I got a few pages in and I kept falling asleep, so...
It is daunting. And, yeah. It's one of those books that, like, the people who should read it are the exact audience who will never read it.
How so?
Like the people who will actually endure the book. And I, it's a good book, but it is long. It's 1,200 pages. So the people that will endure that long of a book are the choir, right? I mean, she's preaching to that choir, and the people who really need to read it to see the illustration of you know what collectivism can do to a society, they're not gonna stick with it long enough to see the picture.
Just because it's bad writing, and collectivists appreciate good writing, right?
I don't think it's bad. I mean,
okay. I haven't read it, but I have heard that it's not the highest quality of literature while it's pushing its agenda. So like you get the agenda, but it's not the best of literature there.
I will agree with that. I mean, I think Stephen King's probably a better writer as far
for sure.
You know, painting a mental picture and engaging the reader.
And isn't some of the agenda kind of a little bit sledgehammery? I mean, you don't have to like go look at the Cliff Notes to figure out what the agenda is, right?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a sledgehammer necessarily. The characters are very two-dimensional, you know, like
right.
She sets them up, knocks them down, and you know, there's no fuzz on that, so. In that respect, I guess it could be more subtle. But I will say I was a little disappointed with the movie, at least the first part of the movie that came out last year.
Well, there's a movie?
Yeah, oh yeah. They've been struggling since the book was published to get the movie rights and actually make a movie. You can look that up online if you want. That's been a whole epic saga all by itself, just trying to get the movie made. But they finally did it, and it was, you know, two guys, independent filmmakers. They, you know, they couldn't raise enough money to hire any big stars to be in it. There's a lot of people you recognize, you know, character actors from other movies, but no real big names. And they made the first part last year. The second part has now been made, and it's coming out in October. But there's no guarantee that they'll have the wherewithal to do the entire trilogy.
Can't say I'm rooting for them.
Yeah. Well, I'll probably go see it just because I saw the first one. And, you know, I want to see how they do because, I mean, they did a good job sticking close to the book, the way, you know, the story's told in the book. They didn't give it the Hollywood treatment, really. All right, moving on. I wanted to circle back on our discussion last episode about gun control. Just a couple of things that had occurred to me after we did that episode. I put a link in the show notes to an article that was in CNN. And this, of course, is following the theater shooting in Colorado, which we discussed on the last episode. But since then, there was another shooting of a Sikh temple in Wisconsin. Is that right?
Sure.
Yeah, I think so.
And then just yesterday, I think, another shooting at Texas A&M. So anyway, CNN had this little article they call By the Numbers, Guns in America. So there's a link in the show notes. But one of the statistics in there that stood out was the percentage of Americans who died in a firearm homicide in 2009, which I guess was the last year they could find numbers for. Anyway, the percentage is 0.000038%.
That's 3/8 too many.
Well, okay, but compare that to the percentage of Americans who, you know, drowned in a swimming pool or were killed in a car accident or, you know.
Right. Yeah. I'm with it.
It's pretty insignificant. And then one number that they completely neglected to mention in that article was the number of violent crimes that were prevented by armed victims, which is a very difficult number to estimate, but it should not be excluded from the discussion, I think. If you're going to talk about guns and how they're used, that's a number that is worth mentioning, at least. And they didn't. So, and then the other thing that the other story I came across this past week is about the world's first 3D printed gun. I don't know if you guys heard about this. A guy with a 3D printer at home, he used it to print the lower receiver of an AR-15.
What's a 3D printer?
One of those resin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How does it work? I think I know how it works, but tell the listeners.
There are different models, and they use different materials. Some of them actually create, you know, 3D objects out of metal. This one uses plastic resin, and it builds up layer upon layer upon layer of this plastic resin, and it has a little heating element in it that causes it to cure, so that the printer can move back and forth and up and down and basically print any 3D object that you have a design for in a computer.
Fancy.
Yeah. So he has one and he used it to print a lower receiver for an AR-15. AR-15 is, as I mentioned last episode, the civilian equivalent of the military's M16. Okay, so the interesting thing about this is the lower receiver is generally what determines what a firearm is, okay, from a purely legal standpoint. Whether or not a gun is a gun is determined by its receiver, how it's designed, you know, what sort of magazine it accepts, whether it's fully automatic or semi-automatic. Those things are determined by the lower receiver, okay? So when you want to go to ban a weapon, you're going to look at the characteristics of the lower receiver of a weapon in order to describe it and ban it. And this guy printed the lower receiver, but then made a pistol out of it, okay? So the M16 obviously is a rifle, but he put a much shorter barrel on it, made a pistol, and the rest of the parts were commercial off-the-shelf parts that he bought, and the barrel and the chamber and magazine and all that were made of metal. And he said he put like 200 rounds through it and it worked just fine. So here's the interesting part to me is that 3D printers are proliferating. I mean, there's ones you can buy online now, like MakerBot is one of them. You can buy one of these things for a few $100, I think, and put them together, and then you're all set. You can print anything you want. Well, if that's the case, and if we get to the point where we can print guns at home, then haven't we just made gun control obsolete?
Yes.
And, I find that to be interesting. It's sort of parallels where we are with copyright law now. I mean, copyright has essentially become obsolete with the technology. And I think we've just taken the step towards that for gun control. I think technology has now rendered that obsolete as well.
Although this is probably a stretch, but could you say, well, you can grow your own marijuana at home, so haven't we made drug control obsolete? It hasn't. They're still trying.
Yes. Well, they're still trying with copyright law, too.
Right.
They just, they haven't learned that when you're dead, you lie down.
I like that.
So, yeah, add that to the list of obsolete laws that we continue to waste resources on trying to enforce in this country. So, that's my little rant. That's all I wanted to say about guns.
I don't know if I mentioned this already, and I know I didn't research it, but I did see a graphic that was talking about different cities that had gun bans on them and what the crime rates before and after the bans were. And this was obviously being promoted by somebody against gun control, because they cited Washington, D.C., and I think it was Chicago. I don't know. But the crimes skyrocketed. It wasn't even It was well beyond any kind of statistical anomaly.
Right.
But it's the point of that is you don't see that when the discussions of gun control come up. They talk about the massacres and the mass killings, and you don't see the number that you showed about the very low percentage of people killed in gun-related deaths.
Right.
That's all I have to say.
Jimmy, do you, thank you, Jeremy, for contributing to the roundtable. Do you think we're unique, though? Did we talk about this already? Is this an American thing? Is shooting up ourselves kind of an American thing? American. I think if you watch the Bowling for Columbine, it certainly makes the case that we're somehow unique in this way.
All right, that movie was fraudulent. I did watch it, and Michael Moore is a fraud of he's a fraud among frauds. I mean, the fact that he admitted who was it he was going after? Kmart, right?
Right.
Okay. None of the ammo they sold was used in the Columbine shooting. He admitted that. Yet he still was lobbying Kmart to pull ammo from their shelves and trying to attribute it as this contributed to the violence.
Sure, sure. I mean, that, Michael Moore is a little bit like a Rush Limbaugh, that there may be, like, underneath all the flab, there may be a mustard seed of truth in there, but it's hard to get at with all of the sort of the pompous, you know, showmanship there.
Attributed him to somebody from the conservative side. Stand alone, you don't need to compare him to anyone. You can look at him on his own merits or lack of, and the
sure. I'm just saying he's not pseudo unique.
Pseudo documentaries that he's made that are they're phony. Right. He's pressing an agenda.
Sure.
And
so it comes down to the whatever grain of truth there might be in the agenda, much less about the actual rounds at Kmart. I mean, I was just at the Walmart and saw where all the rounds are sold. It's just, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a big gun control guy, so but it does seem. I'm just wondering if it's unique. You know, I don't really know any different.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know because I haven't spent any time researching this, and certainly we don't have a. I mean, even anecdotally, we don't have a good feel for like how many stories there are in foreign press about, you know, mass shootings. I kind of feel like maybe there aren't as many in other countries, but I just don't know. Because maybe what's unique about us is that we don't see the news from other countries. And other countries see the news from here. So, like,
we did talk about this when we were during our last on location.
A little bit.
Said these same things. But.
I remember I was on an international flight once. And I was sitting next to a guy from Scotland, and somehow we got talking about guns and gun control. And this was actually, it was 99, so it was shortly after Columbine. And he made the point that there had never been a mass shooting in Scotland, and that he personally didn't see any reason why anybody needed a gun. And That sparked a fairly lively discussion.
Wait a minute. Scotland? Somebody from Scotland was saying that?
Yeah, yeah.
A country that twice fought for its own freedom from
right,
but the oppression of a king.
But they didn't have guns then, right? So.
Right.
Maybe if they did, they would have kept their freedom.
Right. Well, there's an argument to be made there, and that was kind of where I came from, was that, the U.S. was born, its independence was born out of gun ownership, and if they hadn't been armed the way they were, the American Revolution never would have happened. If the British government had been successful in controlling the guns, which they were trying to do, then we never would have gotten our independence. So the point I was trying to make, though, is that he made the claim that there had never been a mass shooting like that in Scotland. And that's just one data point, and maybe he was wrong about that. Maybe there have been, and he just didn't know about them. I don't know. But I'm sure there are countries on Earth that have never had mass shootings like that. But I'm not willing to go so far as to say this is a uniquely American phenomenon.
Well, take Afghanistan. Tribal militias are the norm over there, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So
it's perfect. It seems like all of the countries that we're aiming for are like Afghanistan and Somalia.
Yeah.
Because we have as many guns as we want in Afghanistan, and we have very limited government in Somalia.
Those countries are inspirational.
Send me over there. You probably want to.
I don't know that I want to, no.
Oh, you're nice. What a guy.
I think they're interesting experiments that can tell us some things about the way humans behave in the absence of other humans.
Right.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will discuss the things we have learned as members of the panel here on the Midwest Peace Process. So stay with us. We are back, and now we are going to discuss things that we have learned over the last year participating in this little experiment. But before we jump into that, I want to tell everybody we're going to end the show with a little retrospective of, I guess you could kind of call it a blooper reel, of some of our greatest hits from the last year. So make sure you stay until the end for that. Take a walk down memory lane with us for the last 12 months.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure you get my imitation of a liberal voice on that.
Oh, yeah. That's in there. So, what have we learned, gentlemen?
I have learned that I think about the definition of things more. I used to just make a lot of assumptions when I heard an idea or a word or whatever. And now I think about what it really means, try to break things down. I no longer assume that the government has the power to pass a given law just because they're the government. And I've learned that Rob is a Looney Tune.
Guilty as charged.
Nice. All right.
I'll be a Looney Tune.
No, I didn't learn that. I already knew that.
Rob, would you care to respond?
Wow. I mean, I think the most interesting part is the libertarian. The Jerry's my favorite member of the boy band. Can I say that? Not my favorite, but the most, probably the most thought-provoking and the most interesting, because it's so different than what is normally in the discourse. So, and not that Jeremy doesn't have great things to say, because Jeremy is certainly no standard GOP man either. But the libertarian ideas I find interesting, and I find them at the root of Republican thinking. But I guess the thing that surprises me the most is how, like, I almost feel more receptive to the ideas than my standard GOP friends. When a Jerry type thought comes up to them, it just sort of blows their mind, I think. You know, I think they're so engaged in the elephants versus donkeys thing that they don't even see past the platform, I guess. And they don't even see how, like, what are the limits of their limited government thinking.
Right.
You know, so they'll go on and on about limited government and on about social values. And, you know, I'm surprised at how, maybe I need to talk to better Republicans. But how few of them have they've pushed it to the left. They know where they feel the left infringes upon what they feel is right. But very few have pushed it the other way to say, well, how limited do I really want this government to be? Or in what ways am I also for a large, possibly non-constitutional government because it suits me well?
Yeah.
I mean, so it really is a little tripod we got going here, because the Jerry anarchist libertarian thought is not really, it really is a third leg to talk about third legs.
What in the world?
Oh, God. I don't know how that came up, but you knew it was coming too when I started talking about tripods.
And it's the blooper reel.
So that's kind of the part I found the most fascinating, and I kind of feel I don't know, I feel for you.
You feel for me. Okay.
Oh, there's that liberal. I need to help him.
I need the crowd. Aww. I need like the Fonz crowd. Aww. I mean, because the people that should be the most receptive to your message understand it less than the people who are not receptive to your message at all. Because I feel like maybe because being over on the left side, you know, we understand what that right side's about, so we can kind of ponder and puzzle it, or at least I can. But man, there's no pondering and puzzling for somebody who is down the middle GOP and all they want to do is beat Obama. That's the concept of even further limited government, or even what are the faults in democracy on its own, is just it can't even be pondered because we're too busy trying to get this Obama guy out.
Yeah,
that's how I see it.
I think I have a fourth thing to add to what I've learned, and Rob's ability to pat his party on the back or pat himself on the back,
we are knows great.
No bounds. It never ceases to amaze me.
Well, you know, you have to be full of confidence, right?
Full of something.
Right. In order for this experiment in self-government to be successful.
Like, well, we pragmatic liberals can
very pragmatic.
We can see. We might not agree with your light, but we see your light, and
that's right.
Yeah, but those guys, those other guys, whew.
I do think it's so far removed from anything that we believe in that we could at least look at it.
Here's the Jefferson quote I was struggling to remember. It behooves our citizens to be on their guard, to be firm in their principles, and full of confidence in themselves. We are able to preserve our self-government if we will but think so.
I like that. That's philosophical.
So, that's
the thinking makes it so.
That's why Rob is full of confidence.
There you go. Full of confidence. So there, that's what I've learned.
Even if they are wrong. Okay, well, here's what I've learned. I jotted down three things here. Number one, Infinite Jest is on my bucket list.
Yes. 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 This whole podcast has been worth it.
Number two, I debated whether or not to phrase it this way, but I have some liberal tendencies. and only because I find myself agreeing with Rob more often than I really thought I would going into the show.
Yes.
There's a lot of common ground there when it comes to, you know, my feelings of obligation to my fellow man. You know, I think I share that with him. It's the next step where we diverge. Like, you know, how do you act upon that? That's where I don't think we always agree. Because, you know, this comes back to what we were talking about earlier about individualism versus collectivism. Because me, that's an individual decision. That's an individual choice of how you act on those feelings. And for Rob, I think it's more a collectivist choice.
Yeah, that's right.
So, and then the last thing that, you know, I've really had to come to grips with since we've been doing this show and getting the feedback from our listeners, and, you know, the diversity of opinion out there is so vast that no political system or party could hope to encompass it all. And you know, that's kind of disappointing, I think, that, you know, there would, in other words, there's no tent, you know, there's no big top tent big enough for everybody. And I think that's why our politics in this country are so fractured.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
I agree with that.
So, you know, so we do what we do here, right? We talk about ideas and we, you know, try to expose other people to them to try to minimize those differences, to bring people together and, you know, find the common ground. But man, that is a serious challenge when you start to consider all of the differences in backgrounds and education levels and you know, just the way people are raised, you know, like the values they're taught by their parents and the things that they learn along the way, you know, nobody has the same experience. So everybody looks at every situation differently. And man, it's just really hard to come up with like a list of things that we would all agree on.
True. Yeah, I think hopefully, I guess one of the goals of the podcast, hopefully we're achieving this, is to add some self-reflection, try to figure out, you know, if for things that we feel so strongly about, why do we feel so strongly, or where did that all come from? I'm trying to think about that all myself too. But it seems like I've become more intolerant of sort of knee-jerk reactions, you know, or ever the idea of when a difficult issue comes up, that rather than thinking about it, to go hit the favorite website that's on your side so they can tell you what you think about it. Because yeah, I think things are a lot more interesting than we give them credit for in the way that we all come down on things based on our party affiliation. You know, I don't see how somebody can be so can believe every plank in a political party's platform when we all know that those planks are kind of randomly associated with each other.
Right. Yeah.
There wasn't a conference of philosophers that decided to come up with a consistent platform. It's, you know, random constituents fighting for power all ended up with the party platforms we have.
Right.
So if you're completely in agreement with an entire party's platform, you're really believing in the party and not the things.
Yeah. Yeah, and this kind of this draws the parallel again that we seem to make a lot on this show between politics and religion, because, you know, the different denominations are the same way, right? They have right. Articles of faith that you have to subscribe to in order to belong to a particular congregation, let's say, and if you don't agree with it, you're ostracized and possibly even excommunicated from that congregation. And then maybe you go off and form your own, and, you know, your own set of followers that adhere to your own unique flavor of that religion. I think the same happens with political parties, you know.
Right. Agreement on the birthday.
How about that? It only took a year.
I like it.
All right. What else you got, Jeremy?
I don't think I have anything.
Okay. Well, that's all I got. Rob?
It's enough for a day, isn't it? Enough for 1 week?
Probably. Well, happy birthday, guys.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, you too.
Thanks for being part of this this journey, and here's to another year of fine debate and discussion. We will end this show with, like I said, with with a brief retrospective of the last year, and hopefully our listeners will get a kick out of hearing some of the crazy stuff we've said over the last year. So once again, I want to thank all of our listeners that have been a part of the show this past year, and thank you guys for helping make the show what it is.
Hey.
Hey.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you, Jeremy. All right. That about wraps it up. See you next time.
Good night.
Bye now.
So, my original comment that we are worse off now than we were in 1850 stands. So, suck it.
Oh, man.
It's good to have the conflict.
You're going
to
Google up some stats that say it's not worth it, so you don't have to go walk those extra steps to put the can in the doodad. I don't know what it's called. Recycling bin. There we go. Figured it out.
That was complicated.
I went with doodad.
Taxation is theft. But, so, it is.
Because I think this is the feeling, like I'll buy something and I'll have like 7 cents change. So all right, the nickel, you know, hey, it's 5 cents. That's what a nickel's worth.
You are such a wanker, and that's the other thing I wanted to bring up. Rob is such a namby-pamby.
I'm gonna blow my nose real quick. Tell me if you can hear this.
We can hear it.
Yeah. You got that? You got that snot rocket?
Yeah. I'm going to add that to the blooper reel.
I don't know. Jeremy could tell you all about klaxons and gaxons. I don't know how space works.
My stories aren't going anywhere tonight.
Sure.
What a ding dong.
Sorry, Hans, whatever his name is. You're going in the clink.
You need a drinking holiday to mollify the xenophobes.
It's almost like the United Nations of home improvement.
Okay, we've kind of gotten off topic here.
I hurt so much for those poor people. I'm so good. I'm a good person because of it.
Because what? I just checked Drudge. You got to check my Drudge. That's good. Maybe this is the optimistic show. We don't sound too optimistic.
You don't want to pay? I thought you loved paying for other people's stuff. That's the whole premise of your party.
I know loads of teenage boys that like to do the little A in the circle.
Yeah.
It's just awesome. So.
Right.
Jerry, you need a new symbol that's less awesome.
We need a soundbite of Rob saying, I know loads of teenage boys.
See, hamburgers are the root of all evil.
I ain't saying she a gold digger.
Is that the
your pen?
I'm getting a little crazy here.
Can you stop clicking your pen?
No, I can't. The pen is right here, and I'm clicking it.
I know. I can hear it. Keep sitting over there polishing Obama's halo for him.
Well,
that's what I think would be a strong nation.
I would agree with you.
Right.
And I don't know how we get there because...
I don't know either.
I mean, I don't know how you get rid of the poor.
Right, right.
Very cold winters.
I think it's good. I want to be like... We could be like the 21st century magi.
That only...
Yeah.
Only liberals are open-minded.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. That's not true?
I certainly didn't think I'd end up here.
Now, what came out? Is it going to work? I don't know. Is it, you know, do I wish it was different? Yes. Do I ask questions of myself and then answer them? Yes.
Any links in the reading room you guys want to highlight?
I put one in there, but I found it through Drudge, so I won't say anything about it.
Come on. But you know, reality does have a well-known liberal bias. We're a little bit in the political silly time now.
Just going through 12 years of public school, you don't come out with a skill.
True. You know, unless being an automaton is a skill.
I guess it's when I'm lefting it up with my lefty friends and we're having tea and sticking our pinkies out. That's what we do.